Hi, I'm Rob Grizz and I'm the producer of Australian Rock of Ages, and it's a pleasure to bring you another program in this series of 24 monthly programs that will feature the life and time stories of some of the people whose talent, skills and dedication have contributed to the development of Australian music, particularly through the 1960s and 1970s. In this program, we feature the story of Mike Rudd.
You know, you look back at the 70s and you think, well, what's different? What was different then compared to now, musically? In those days, all the band's members contributed to what the sound was. So you had a bass player who played bass that way. You had a guitarist who played guitar that way. And that's the way it came out. They weren't reading parts, but they weren't session musicians. Mm. They were actively, artistically creating a sound. And that doesn't happen these days. Something to do.
For me, that's great that you've just said that, because it leads me into where I wanted to go next, which was the state of Australian music as it is today.
Oh, well, I haven't the vaguest idea. I don't know, where is Australian music? There was a moment when we first started, when I'll Be Gone was on the charts, when Daddy Cool were on the charts, when Billy Thorpe was on the charts, when Chain were on the charts. There was an Australian voice that was being accepted.
Yes.
And you could say, well, wow, it wasn't going well. It's Australian and it's made it, despite being Australian. There were various things going on. There was the Labor Party coming, Whitlam coming into power around about the same time. Mm. A belief in being Australian. I don't see that anymore, but I think that's the difference.
I think that opens up a whole vista of conversation, which we won't have time for, but I'll pull you back just briefly back to the music. Sitting here right now, if you're just thinking back to that period of the 70s onwards, where for you do you think it started going, if I can use the word wrong, where did the pathways just get lost? What happened? Because it was so strong.
Yeah, it comes down to, I suppose, that self-belief. The cultural cringe thing, we don't use that expression anymore, but it's still there to a degree. And look, everything's changed so much. When we were talking about the early days, and all the kids in our era loved music. Everybody loved the Beatles, and then everybody loved the Beatles and the Rolling Stones. Then it started to split up, and then you can actually go through life without listening to any other music but the genre of your choice. Now, when we were listening to radio in my day, you were listening to everything. You'd listen to sort of light classics, you'd listen to popular music, and then they'd have a hit parade once a week. So you were getting all this input from other sources that you may not strictly be interested in, but it's all valid. You know? So you were getting creative input from all different kind of areas, and that's what I kind of... That's me in so many ways, because the Spectrum Manifesto, which starts off with the name Spectrum covers means that all genres of music are, you know, as long as it's good, I listen to it. I like all sorts of music. I listen to classical music mostly, and then I've got a bunch of other favourites, but I kind of like being hit with different sorts of music.
Mm. I interviewed recently Anita Monk.
Yes.
I believe you were her first interviewee on her Rockdown program.
Yes.
So it's nice to join the circles up. And she made an interesting observation when we were having a similar discussion that certainly from the mid-60s through to most of the 70s, there was such a plethora of live venues.
Yeah.
And that young bands could go out and they'd get a gig and there'd be a headline act, which was a big name. You'd often have an act which was just on the cusp of making it big, and then you'd have your young band who could go in and watch these other acts and learn from them. Watch them and learn how they, you know, how they relate to their audiences, how they structured their music. And there was enough venues to go around. And she was bemoaning the fact that the pub music scene died away when the Pokies came in, and so the venues shrunk. And that experience is not there for young players now. Have you seen it that way?
Look, I'm so remote from all that. And it's not just living in Mount Evelyn. But it's just, I don't go out to gigs anymore. But I know that there are gigs there for young bands. But quite often it's a case of they're, from what I gather, they're getting employed because they have a following. And they, if they don't have a following, they don't get employed because they're not going to bring in enough money. And they're not necessarily getting any money themselves. And that's the difference between playing in Melbourne and London in the 70s was that there were gigs here. Mm. And there were just pokey little gigs in London, and you struggled to get them. And often bands played for nothing.
Mm.
That's we were very lucky for a long time here. So... But I plead ignorance.
Most creative people, if they've thought about it, would probably see music as part of the lifeblood, if not the soul of a nation. If the music is, your arts are strong, music is strong, the nation's in a pretty healthy situation. Do you fear for creation of music in Australia in the future? Do you see it has a future?
Well, it's...
And what does that say about our nation?
Yeah. Well, look at what do you consider to be Australian cuisine? There is no definitive Australian music scene any longer. We've become internationalised. The only bits of... I'm just trying to think back to... the Divinals, for instance. You could say they had a definitive Australian sound, but... What happened after that? I don't really know. I think most
Well, that might tell the story that you. It is hard to pinpoint. It just seems to have dissolved.
Yeah. Yes, I think that we were talking about the Australian voice there before, and confidence and it being there. I think you have to legislate it to be there, really. And if you don't, it's going to disappear.
You mentioned Mount Evelyn, and you live in a very beautiful area around here, and it's very green and it's very clean, and the air's beautiful. Do you sit and wonder and think about the future of this planet? Because Mount Evelyn is not really representative of what's going on outside this area.
I don't know. I don't know whether you can say anything is particularly typical. I mean, the Australian way of life is not conducive to communal kind of approach generally, and being living in Mount Evelyn, where a particular example of you know, we don't particularly know our neighbours that well. We're not a community kind of feel out here, and in summer we fear for the fires.
Mm-hmm.
So there are. Yeah, I don't know whether you can say there's anything particularly.
Well, what
typical.
About the issues of climate change? I mean, the way that there seems to be a total disregard for the environment by those who've got the power more than the people who think about it. If you had great-great-grandchildren, would you be fearing for them?
Yes, of course. But the basis for all of this is there are too many people on the planet, Rob.
If I was to be able to imbue you with the power to make do something about it, well, how would you tackle that, though?
Well, the Chinese...
Without becoming a fascist.
Yeah, well, the Chinese tackled it, and then they've kind of relented. It's hard to see how you do it. Material, what happens in our societies is that you build up a certain material wealth, and then in a country like this, you have two cars and two TVs and then three cars and three TVs. So it's the same audiences accumulating all the stuff that if it was spread around would have a drastic effect on the birth rate.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, material, you look at Europe, the birth rate stagnated. You look at Africa, the birth rate's going through the roof.
Mm.
There's a simple equation of, and it's obviously oversimplified, but, you know, I think that you look forward and you project forward and you think, well, how boring is it going to be with even more, you know, a double the size of people on the planet, and how can you actually accommodate all those people?
Mm. It's certainly not difficult to come up with the questions, but the answers seem to be...
Oh, well, no, you can't. But, I mean, you know, we're ready for a big war.
Well, that's a happy thought. No, in your mind, though, is that realistic?
Oh, look, I'm sure it's more difficult to have a big war these days because people are going, that means I'm going to get killed.
Mm.
In the old days, you go, oh, yeah, we'll get those buggers. But now it's we're a little more cynical.
Mm.
So it's a little more difficult to get a war, but we can have wars that we like. I'm very pessimistic about human nature.
Well, sometimes I think pessimism is an indication of a reality check when you look at what's going on.
You say the way you really feel, then that's all right. You say I do not need to know, and what I don't know cannot hurt me, that's all right. Believe in everything you say is what I do best anyway, so that's all right. But do not let me catch you out beneath it all. I know what you're about. That's alright, you wanna say. Say it for another day. That's alright, you wanna say. Save it for another day. Do not let me stop you now. I won't believe. Anyhow, so that's all right. I've listened to your lies so long, I won't believe the truth.
Get a group of young people in here now who had this desire to be musicians, to make music a career. What would be your advice to them? They look at you as an older, more experienced person.
Well, yeah,
we want to be musicians.
The advice of the prior generation was get a trade, boy.
You go and get a job and cut your hair.
Have something else you can fall back on. But, you know, there are... You can't first, you can't generalise, but there are lots of young people who are prodigiously talented and who will make a living in music, without a doubt. But the way that music is, has always been, is that not everybody makes their mark.
Yes, that's for certain. You're still a fairly young man. I mean, in our generation, we are becoming, that is, the baby boomers are becoming the older generation. But unless that bus down the road accidentally hits you tomorrow, you've probably got another 20, 25, maybe even 30 years left in you.
That's a bit scary.
It's a bit scary. But our life expectancy is increasing, and generally our generation are a lot healthier. And as I said, except for that bus, there's still a bit of living to do. That is a fairly lengthy period of time, 20, 25, even 30 years. What would you like to achieve in that period? Or is that an unfair question for a man who takes life as it comes?
No, look, I have certain... there are models, there are precedents. Jim Keyes is my precedent, my model. He died with his rock and roll boots on, and I can't think of a better way of going. If I've got this far, I might as well just keep going.
Mm.
And if I can pull it off, then that's the way I'd like to go.
There is still an audience out there, isn't there?
Yes, it's getting more difficult because we're going to have to play all our gigs exclusively in the early afternoon.
Because we can't stay up late. It's true. Yeah. Our generation is also, sadly, we lose a lot of people along the way, more and more each year now.
Yeah.
It's almost like, you know, you could expect in another 10 years' time that it become almost like an exclusive club because, sadly, more of us are passing on. Do you look back over this period of time and have any regrets about it?
Very few. I've been incredibly lucky, and as I say, I have a beautiful relationship now with Maria. And
I didn't mean to ask you, how did you meet Maria?
It was at a gig.
Oh, surprise, surprise.
A gig in Canberra.
Right.
So it was only recently we discovered that I'd actually notated it down on the website Stop Press. So I actually have a photograph of her on that day at that gig, which is somewhat surprising. It's 10 years ago.
Time flies, doesn't it? Most of us are lucky if we find one person in our life that we really connect with in that regard. I mean, in terms of personal male-female relationships, or male-male, you found two.
Yes. Yeah, well...
That makes you extra lucky, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah. Indeed.
The time does come when we all have to pass on. Living and dying is part of being a human being. When that time comes for you, how would you like to be remembered by your family and friends?
Well, family, as they say, is everything. And I have a few good musical friends. I'm very lucky to have. The bands that I've been with have been really loyal and good friends in that regard. And actually, if you check back through the personnel and all the bands, there's not that many. I mean, Bill and me stuck together for a hell of a long time. And the band that I have at the moment has been going for, you know, most of the last 10 years, if not more. They're with the same basic lineup.
Mm.
Very lucky to attract Mason into the sort of permanent lineup now. I don't know whether you can actually... I don't know whether you can actually think about what you... You just have to do the best you can, and I count myself very lucky to have lived in this time, because I don't believe that we're going to go through this, what we've been through in the music scene ever again. And we were very lucky, and it's... The trajectory is so well known that it's just become an academic exercise. It's got nothing to do with excitement. We didn't know what we were doing. We didn't ever know what we were doing. And I have the pleasure of still not knowing what I'm doing.
That's in some ways very Zen-like, isn't it? because it's really like be here now, live the moment, and just let it evolve. It's been a wonderful hour or so that we've spent together, and I think for people listening, they might have learnt a little bit more about you than they might have just from listening to the music, or that alone, I think, is a great legacy for you.
That's a very in-depth interview, isn't it? Thank you for that.
And yeah, well, I'd just like to thank you for being on the program, and it's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mike Rudd.
I thought we might just finish this program off with one of my favourite tracks written by Mike and played by Mertzips, called We Are Indelible. And if you Google the word indelible, you'll find it comes up with Not Able to Be Forgotten. And I think that's a great way to finish a program, because I think Mike and his music will never be forgotten.
This program is a Handsome Doc production and is podcast through the Toorak Times and TAG.